Hello. Welcome to the Unity Spiritual Center of Albuquerque podcast featuring the Reverend Gordon Kyler or occasionally a guest speaker. You can find us online at uscabq.org or by searching for Unity Spiritual Center Albuquerque on Facebook or YouTube. You can visit us in person at 9800 Candelaria Road Northeast in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And now, Reverend Gordon Kyler.
How many of you have ever seen that? Well, let me ask this. How many of you have not seen Casablanca? A few people, wow. It is probably one of the greatest movies of all time. I encourage you to watch it, especially after today. We are continuing our series on the 12 powers and using popular movies to represent each one of those powers. And of course, today we are on the power of love. The other powers, the ones we have done so far, are faith and strength, wisdom. Today, love. We're going to be doing the power of power, imagination, will, order, enthusiasm, or zeal, release, and the power of life. Now, for those of you who may not be aware, these 12 powers are represented in the scriptures by the number 12 that appears over and over again. There's 12 tribes of Israel, 12 pillars in the temple, 12 disciples of Jesus, and many others. You like that, huh? I love it when our young ones get enthusiastic. They are basic, primal, spiritual gifts, or abilities, you could say. Everyone possesses them. Regardless of what religion or no religion, every human being who has ever lived, is alive, or ever will live, possesses these powers. There's nothing magical about them. There's nothing you have to go out and do to get them. You already have them, even you. You don't know it yet, but you got them. Or maybe you know it better than we do. When we are fully present to that Christ power within us, these are the qualities we are going to demonstrate to their fullest. And we do use these powers all of the time. But the better we can understand them, the more we are aware of them, the more we engage in them, the more effective we are at expressing that Christ consciousness that Jesus modeled for us. So today, we are going to delve into the power of love as demonstrated in the movie Casablanca. Before I get to the movie, though, let's talk a little bit about what love is. True love, spiritual love. According to Reverend David Williamson, who wrote, "The power of love is our ability to know oneness with all and to desire that only good comes to all." Boy, that's a tough one, isn't it? So often in our humanness, we don't go there. We think good should only come to those who think like we do, or who look like we do, or who believe like we do. But no, goodness should be for everybody and is for everybody. And our desire should be that everybody experiences this. Our desire is for oneness with all. And again, that's a tough one. How do we be one with all? Because not everything looks wonderful, does it? How do we be one with it? Well, we begin by knowing what love does. Love heals, it harmonizes, it renews, it prospers, and it unites. Love is our ability to share and to draw together, regardless of anything. Love is our consciousness that casts out fear. And Reverend Williamson goes on to write, "Love, more than any other of our spiritual powers, is often thought of as something we get from other people. We think of love as something that others give to us or we can choose to give to them rather than what we are. We think of love as something we need to feel rather than the cosmic expression of what we are. We are love, filtered through our human brain. But what if we could move beyond that? Love is a spiritual power that we all have, but we can only experience it by becoming loving. You know, I believe that what the world needs now is not more love, but more loving. The world needs more loving. In other words, we need to stop looking at love as a verb and begin to, we need to stop looking at love as a noun and begin to look at it as a verb, an action, something we do. Eric Butterworth wrote, "You cannot give love to anyone, and no one can give love to you. You can be loving. You can be love, which will recreate an environment in which others around you may find it easy to radiate and to express love, and thus be loving to you. Love is not a commodity to give, but a process through which you touch and express your own deeper nature." This begins to shift our whole understanding of the power of love, doesn't it? It is not something we can give. It is something we go through, that we are, that we become. It's not the plaything of the emotions or senses, but the action of divine law. Charles Fillmore wrote this, "We may talk about the wisdom of God, but the love of God must be felt in the heart. It cannot be described, and one who has not felt it can have no concept of it from the description of others. The more we talk about love, the stronger it grows in our consciousness. If we persist in thinking loving thoughts and speaking loving words, we are sure to bring into our experience the feeling of that great love that is beyond description, the very love of God, or as Jesus put it, the love that passes all understanding." Don Miguel Ruiz, in his book, Toltec Wisdom, The Mastery of Love, talks about it. He wrote, "We can talk about love and write 1,000 books about love, but love will be completely different for each one of us because we have to experience love. Love is not about concept. It is about action. And love and action can only produce happiness. Fear and action can only produce suffering." I'm going to say that again because I think it's so important in light of what's going on. You don't have to take her out if she makes noise. We love our kids. She is more than welcome to spread her love amongst us. I can talk loud too. So I'm going to say that word again. Okay. Love in action can produce only happiness. Fear in action can only produce suffering. As you listen to the media in the days ahead, remember that, please, and choose which consciousness you're going to be in. The only way to master love is to practice love. You don't need to justify your love. You just need to practice your love. These are the words of Don Miguel. Practicing creates mastery. Don Miguel continues, "The teachings that come from India, from the Toltecs, from the Christians, from the Greeks, from societies all over the world come from the same fundamental truth. They talk about reclaiming your divinity and finding God within you. They talk about having your heart be completely open and becoming wise. Can you imagine what kind of world this would be if all humans learned to open their hearts and find the love inside? You know what? It can be done. Everyone can do it. Now, we each do it in our own way, but everyone can do it. And it's not about following any imposed idea or any specific religious teaching or anything. It's about finding yourself, finding your true self, knowing who you really are. When we do that, when we can find our love, we become human, and we truly become God in expression. We align with the Spirit that moves in and through us, and our life becomes an expression of that Spirit. Life is nothing but a dream. And if we create our lives with love, our dreams become masterpieces of art. I love what Cora Fillmore wrote. She said that love is the attractive force that draws our good to us according to the depth and strength of our realization of love. What are we drawing to us? What are we drawing to us as individuals? What are we drawing to us as a nation? What are we drawing to us as a society? What are we drawing to us as a species? And can we change that? And of course, the answer is yes. And there are people who say, well, when the race of human beings learns to master love, how about when I learn to master love? It starts with each one of us. What do we sing at the end of every service? Let there be peace on earth, and let it begin where? With me. Love's the same way. Peace comes out of love. Let there be love on earth, and let it begin with me. So how do we do that? Well, the first act of love is to see a person or an object, a reality as we call it, as it truly is. That involves an immense amount of self-discipline, because it's so easy to see what's going on around us and other people around us based on the eyes of popular media or social media or pundits here and preachers there. We have to see it from our heart. We have to see it as it truly is. We have to drop our desires, drop our prejudices, drop our memories, our projections, our selective way of looking at things. This discipline is so great that the vast majority of people would rather plunge headlong into either buying into the negative side of it or immersing themselves in good action and service, which is okay, rather than submitting to the burning fire of what the Buddhists call asceticism. True asceticism is not eating. It's not owning material possessions. That's an outer practice. True asceticism is not owning personality, is not owning opinions, is not owning judgment. It is being love. Once we do that, we set ourselves free, and we set those around us free. Now, love, I'm going to stop here for a moment, because especially in New Thought, we sometimes get into a thing of trying to be so loving that we'll put up with anything, mostly in our families or in our media communities. Love does not mean you tolerate bad behavior, okay? This is important. It means you can have boundaries to keep you safe. It means you can say, I love you, but I cannot have a relationship with you where you are at the moment. That's okay. Jesus said, love one another. He did not say you have to like one another. That's important. There were people, if you really read the Gospels, including some of the Nag Hammadi Gospels and the others, there are people Jesus did not like. He loved them. He saw the good in them. He called forth as much as he could the good in them. They couldn't see it themselves. And he said, I will shake the dust off my feet and move on. That's a hard one. It's a very difficult one. But it's important to remember that we can be loving, but we don't have to be self-abusive. And certainly not abusive to others. Father Anthony DeMello, an author, wrote this. When asked what are the greatest commandments, and remembering that those asking were trying to trip him up because he kept breaking the rules, Jesus answered, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and to love your neighbor as yourself. Oh, we quote that in Christianity all the time. to love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and body, and your neighbor as yourself. And most times we are not really good at always loving our neighbor. Our neighbor who has different political beliefs. Our neighbor who has different religions. Our neighbor who looks different than us. Our neighbor who lives differently than we do. Why is that so hard? Because we totally forget the next part. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. How many of us really love ourselves? What if we were to love ourselves the way Paul described it in 1 Corinthians? What if we would stop comparing ourselves to others? Stop being irritable and harsh with ourselves? What would happen? We would discover happiness. And happy people are much more likely to be loving. Happy people are much more likely to be generous, to be positive, to be grateful, and to be supportive of others. What if we were willing to love ourselves unconditionally? Instead of, I'll be happy when, or I'll love myself when I lose weight, when I make more money, when I'm in a relationship, when I have whiter teeth. What's your condition? How have you been holding your love, your acceptance of yourself hostage? Because that's what we've been doing. Which leads us to our movie, Casablanca. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with the movie, I'm just going to sum it up real briefly. It's a long movie. There's a lot in it. But I'm going to sum it up real briefly. It's December 1941. And there's an American expat who had been living in Paris when the Nazis invaded France. He and others like him fled Paris, trying to get out of Europe. The only way out was, and this is actual fact, the only way out was to try to make your way to Casablanca, which was in neutral Morocco, and from there you could go to either neutral Lisbon and get a plane to the United States or to England, or get out some other way. So Rick, his name is Rick, he's found himself in Casablanca, and he has opened up the Rick's Cafe American, which attracts a very varied clientele. Remember, this is neutral territory. So his customers that come in every night are Vichy French, and for those of you who don't know, those were French, that was the French side of the government and people who sided with the Nazis. There were Nazi German officials. There were refugees, Jewish and others, desperate to reach neutral United States and escape those who were preying on them. And there were various other shady characters. There was a kind of a mafia kind of organization and lots of crooks and people looking to scam the refugees who were coming in. And Rick professes to be neutral in all of these things. And he's very, comes across it in the beginning of the movie as very cynical, you know, not willing to commit to much of anything. He just lives for his cafe. Now, Rick has a backstory that we find out as the movie goes along. And that backstory was when he was in Paris, he fell in love with this girl named Ilsa. And Ilsa was Bulgarian, played by Ingrid Bergman. Am I right? Ingrid? Yeah, Ingrid Bergman. I had a brain cramp there for a minute. And she had been married to a man named Victor Laszlo. Now, she had thought Victor had died fighting the Nazis. He was in the Czechoslovakian underground. And so they're getting ready. Rick and Ilsa are getting ready to leave Paris to flee. And they make arrangements to meet at the train station, at the airport, and Ilsa doesn't show up. Little does Rick know that the reason she didn't show up is she had just gotten word that her husband was not dead. Now, you can imagine how she felt. Here she is. She loved her husband, and she has now been loving Rick. She loves them both, and she's torn. So she does not show up. Rick doesn't know what's going on. He thinks he's just been abandoned. Talk about abandonment issues. And so he goes on to Casablanca and continues with his life and everything. And lo and behold, one evening, now, oh, before I say this, they had a song. Todd played it for us. They had their song. And Rick, in his pain and his bitterness, had forbid Sam to ever sing it. So there's this scene where Ilsa comes in and sees Sam after all these years. and walks up to him and convinces him to play the song, not realizing even yet that Rick was there. Rick's in the back. And he hears Sam playing this song, and he comes storming out. I told you never to play that song again. And Sam says, well, there's a lady here who requested it. Now, Rick was so caught up in his bitterness that he was blind to Ilsa standing in his club. And when Sam says that, of course, he sees her. Now, there's another plot, subplot going on here where a man named Ugarte had killed two German couriers and stolen their papers that gave them free passage, safe passage throughout Europe, and was going to sell them in the club to some refugees so they could escape. And he asked Rick to hold them. Well, Ugarte gets arrested by Renault, who's a crooked cop, crooked French cop, and ends up dying in custody. So Rick has these papers. Ilsa becomes aware of it and convinces Rick to give the papers to Victor so that Victor can escape, and she'll stay there with Rick. Well, Rick begins to have an opening, an awakening. He begins to have a healing, although he's not aware of it yet. And right now, we're going to show a clip that shows the first crack in his defenses. So guys, if you could show that first clip. German officers had come into the club. And of course, you know, they're very all about their patriotism and their nationalism. And they stand up and start singing the German national anthem. Well, of course, that is a powerful message that affects the refugees and all the different people in this club very profoundly. And I'm going to tell you in a minute just how profound that really was. And so the sheriff, Renault, the constable, says, Rick, do you hear what they're doing? Do something. And Rick comes out, and he walks up to the band, and he says, play La Merced. And can we do it? What Rick asked the band to do by playing La Merced was quite dangerous. And here we begin to see Rick, the first crack in his defense, moving from that cynical, I'm totally neutral, I don't care what anybody does, to taking a stand. Now, one of the things we find out later about Rick is he has always taken stands. He had fought with the Spanish and the loyalists in the Spanish Civil War. He'd fought with the Ethiopians in the war that happened there. But after his experience with Ilsa, he had put up that shell. He had created a shell that so many of us do when we have bad experiences in our life. So he begins to change. He begins to see that he has to actually take a stand. And he chooses to stand and resist in a nonviolent way by asking the band to play. Now, there's something about this scene that most people did not know. If you look closely, you will see that many of the people in the crowd had tears. Those were real, because many of those actors and actresses were from Europe. Many of them had been in concentration camps. Many of them had lost everything. Many of them had lost loved ones. Even the German officers, if you notice, they turned around away from the camera. That wasn't originally in the script, because they were played by people who had survived concentration camps because they had the accents. And so this scene was very, very emotional, maybe one of the reasons the movie was so powerful. It's the power of love. Now, this movie is a romantic story, and we see that Rick makes an obvious choice here. He realizes that both Victor and Isla need to leave. Now, the original plan is he's going to get Victor out of the country and Ilsa's going to stay with him. But when they get to the airport, he convinces Ilsa to go with Victor, because that is her one true love. And we see this change in him. And we see a change in other people's too. After this scene, the French policeman rediscovers his focus on the fight for freedom. Both he and Rick and others rediscover their love of country, their love of justice, their love of freedom, their love of truth. And we see this love beginning to demonstrate as loyalty, commitment, and ultimately as sacrifice. And this sacrificial love is a recurring theme in the movie. Ilsa sacrifices the love she feels for Rick when she learns that Victor is still alive, fleeing Paris, and she flees Paris to nurse Victor back to health. We see those desperate in the beginning of the film to leave, and they sacrifice their possessions to try to get out. We see Victor willing to sacrifice himself in order to gain Ilsa's freedom. We see Renaud sacrificing his job in a minute to protect Rick from being arrested. And ultimately, we see Rick sacrificing his happiness when he releases Ilsa to go with her husband, realizing it is for the greater good. Father DeMello wrote this: "The first act of love is to see a person or an object, a reality as it truly is, and involves the enormous discipline of dropping your desires, your prejudices, your dreams, your memories, your projections, your selective way of looking, a discipline so great that most people cannot do it." Remember that? Up until that point, Rick had not been able to do that. Renaud had not been able to do it. Others in the movie had not been able to do it. They had been so consumed with hurt and resentment and bitterness over what had happened that they could not see love. But one act changed that. One act of nonviolence, one act cracked the shell. Marianna Williamson wrote this: "Love is what we are born with. Fear is what we have learned." Love is what we are born with. Fear is what we have learned. The spiritual journey is the unlearning of fear and the acceptance of love back into our hearts. We are not held back by the love we didn't receive in the past. We are held back by the love we are not giving in the now. Rick wasn't being held back by the love he didn't get in the past. He was being held back from his full expression by the love he was refusing to give in the present. And it was only when he was willing to let Ilsa back into his own life that he was able to reconnect with that part of himself that was willing to fight for what was right and noble. This is consistent with one of the definitions of love. The power of love is our ability to know oneness with all and to desire that only good comes to all. Rick knew what was best for all was for Ilsa to go with Victor, to continue their fight against an oppressive and dangerous regime. Now, can we see the second clip? Right about then, Strasse, the German commandant, comes up, and he's going to turn them in and have Rick and them arrested, and he pulls out a gun, and Rick pulls out a gun and shoots him. And Renaud says, "Well, I have to report this, I have to do this," and the police show up right then as well, the French police, and Renaud says, "Strasse's been shot, the commandant's been shot, go round up the usual suspects." You've all heard that phrase. It's from this movie. Go, in other words, round up people. Just find kind of scary-looking people, I guess. Round them up, and we'll question them. Rick's standing right there. He lied to save Rick. And, of course, the plane takes off. Victor and Ilsa get away, and Rick and Louis decide they're going to go join the resistance. And, of course, the last line of the movie is, "Louis, this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship." So we have two Ricks here. We have two Ricks. We have Rick at the beginning, who is cynical, who is bitter. Who is drawn within to himself, does not give love. And at the end, we have Rick, who is selfless, who is filled once again with love, once again with a passion for life, a passion for freedom, a passion for truth. Which Rick are we? Are we going to be the Rick at the beginning of the movie or Rick at the end of the movie? You know, there is no difficulty that enough love cannot conquer. No disease that love will not heal. No door that enough love will not open. It makes no difference how deep set a trouble is, how hopeless the outlook is, how muddled the tangle, how great the mistake. A sufficient realization of love will dissolve it all. If only we could love enough. Love enough, and we will be the happiest and the most powerful people in the world. I love you.
We hope you enjoyed today's message. If you would like to support this podcast, you may do so at uscabq.org.